Hey everybody, and welcome back. Oh, right, we'll be interrupted already.
Yes, sorry, I was just confirming that we were recording.
Oh yes, yes we are.
Apologies anyway. For interrupting. I'll be quiet now.
So, well, anyway, we'll try again. But welcome back to the EV Cafe podcast, that takeaway podcast. Yeah, let's just not go there. Hello, Fiona. How are you?
I'm really good, thanks. How are you?
Well, better now that you're here. This has taken a few attempts to get back in the diary, but here we are. Fantastic. John's been ill and things have not gone particularly well. And it's just, well, here we are. And
I'm glad you rated, though. Look at John thriving. So, you know, it's good
really
to have
is.
All of us here.
Indeed. Indeed. So, Fiona, listen, you've been away for a while, in more ways than one. But I don't know that anybody really needs you to introduce yourself. But let's just assume that maybe one or two people don't know who you are. Who are you? Where are you from?
Sure. Hi. I'm Fiona Howarth. I am the founder of Octopus Electric Vehicles, part of the Octopus Energy Group. I joined here about 9 years ago with the kind of ambition to try and make it easy to make the switch to electric cars, you know, just as simple as possible. And since then, yeah, we've grown a business. We've everything from started smart energy tariffs for EV drivers. We have a public charging network that integrates across lots of different networks, actually. So it's like a single app, single card called Electriverse. And then we have a leasing company as well, which we do a lot with salary sacrifice, so employee benefits. But we also do help individuals get their car as well so that they can still access the service and they can pair that with home charging or public charging as they wish. So obviously I've done that, but as you say, I took a sabbatical at the beginning of last year. So I was CEO for many years and then took a sabbatical last year. I think John wants to jump in. Go on.
No, so now, okay, we're just going to just interrupt this flow here. Fiona, that has just proved that you are naughty because you're not supposed to look in the private chat. That's a personal chat between me and John, and that's clearly where you are. We'll not have misbehaviour from our guests, please.
But
John, perfect. It is perfect.
The podcast team, so that you could give me notes.
Perfect way for me to be able to segue to the way your mind works, because you were born a disruptor. You are somebody who does not follow rules. You do not do things the way that others do just because they do. And you've studied engineering at Oxford. You have established a number of different businesses that are way outside of other people's thinking. What is it about Fiona Howarth that makes you think that it's okay to break the rules and just say, do you know what? What's the worst that can happen? What has made you think that way?
Well, I don't know if I'm breaking rules. I think I would reframe it, actually, which is that, you know, in life, the world is at a point where it's at right now. And as we look around, we see things that, you know, we're like, why is it like that? Why are we teaching our kids in a really formulaic way at school at the minute, where we know that actually things like mental health is a massive challenge, and we know that AI is coming, and we're going to need different skills than what we've needed in the past. But we're still educating our kids in the same way that we've been doing it for decades, an education that was system that was designed decades ago. So in a world that's moving and changing, we go, well, why are we doing that? Why don't we go and reinvent the way that we teach our kids so they're better set up for the future, when we can already see indications that they aren't coping well with today's world, with the education we've given them? So when you look at it, it's like, how did we get here? It's not like the people that designed our education system decades ago were not good people. They were amazing. They were like great thinkers, and they were doing the best they could with the information they had available to them at that time. But we had different information available today. We have a completely different world, a society that we live in. So why would we not build and iterate on it? Why do we have to stick to what they designed decades ago, when actually we've got different information in the way that we need to look after our kids? So it's not like I think that there are rules. It's just that is the way that we're set up today the best for society today?
I suppose my interpretation of the rules is societal norms. There are things that we just accept. And the vast majority of the guy in the street, the lady in the street, think in straight lines. They accept that we are governed by our higher ups, our betters, whatever it might be. We perform in a certain way, but you don't. You challenge very, very carefully in a fabulous way. You recognize the importance of the human being in everything that you do, but your thinking is very lateral. It's not straight line. It's broad and it has scope. You may not call it rule breaking, but you step outside of the lines quite a lot.
I feel like I could take us down a rabbit hole just now. So I'll tell you what, I'm going to take you back to my sabbatical actually briefly. One of the things I did on my sabbatical is I did a philosophy course. And on that philosophy course, we looked at four different thinkers, modern day thinkers. And one of the thinkers is a neuroscientist and philosopher called Ian McGilchrist. And he looks around the left brain and the right brain. And he actually worked a lot with people that had strokes and things like that. There's a documentary about him on Prime, Amazon Prime, if you want to go and check it out. It turns out people with strokes have lost part of their brain, one side of the brain. Actually, if you ask them to kind of put pizza sauce on a pizza, they only put it on half of the pizza because they can't actually even see the other half or they can't process the other half. And what's happening is the left side of the brain is really focused on picking stuff up and following, being within the lines. And the right side of the brain is like looking around and, you know, like working out, is that the right thing to pick up? Or is there a better thing coming over there? Or am I going to get caught while I pick this thing up? And so to some extent, your creativity comes with the right side of the brain. And so how do we kind of reinvent things and reimagine things? And actually, I think sometimes I quite like to activate that side of my brain. When I reflect on this, I think maybe that's part of it, which is like, okay, well, is this the right thing to pick up right now? Or should we be driving these petrol cars that we've always been driving? Or is there a better option that isn't burning lots of fossil fuels that we might need, making it painful for the environment, painful for our future generations? Like, is there a better way of doing it? And how do we make that happen? So it's kind of like reinventing the future and not just always sticking with the status quo.
It's a lovely way of, it's kind of looking at the horizon and seeing, I guess from a technical point of view, seeing what's coming, but also asking the question from your point of view, what can I do about the horizon? How can I make it different? Is that the way your brain goes? What can I do that's going to be beneficial?
Yeah. I think all of us like to think that we're making good things happen in the world. And whether that's the person that you interact with on a day-to-day basis that you might make smile or might make their day a bit better, or the team that you work with, through to how can I make positive impact with saving carbon? I'm sure lots of listeners of the EV Cafe care about making a positive impact on the world. I bet lots of us, I think we're all part of that community that want to do good and just aim to supercharge that. No pun intended.
You are a woman of action. I mean, that you are somebody that thinks of things and then does them. I mean, I, you know, happen to know that you've been a great encouragement to Caroline, my wife, who, you know, with the EarthSet project that you kind of are involved in the background. But so with all of that in mind and that desire to kind of go to the ends of the earth and make such a difference, what triggered the sabbatical? And what did you really, because you imagine a sabbatical to be very much kind of down tools and rest, recuperate, recharge. Was that what it was? And what did you really learn from your sabbatical about yourself and about the world around you and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, so there were a couple of things, I think. One was, you know, growing Octopus EV, it'd been quite an intense journey. I think last time I joined the podcast, it was the first time I talked about some of the challenges through lockdown. when we were kind of switching into being a leasing company, and how helpful one of my kind of core leadership team had been at that point, helping me reorganize the team, which, by the way, he stayed with the team and he's now CEO. So that's pretty cool.
Oh my gosh, it was that person that's
it's
now
that
the CEO.
It's that person that helped me is now the CEO. So he stayed with the team.
That.
Yeah, it's really, it's so great because it's such a nice story of like, he's grown with the team as well. He's been there, you know, from really early days helping build it. And now he's running it and he's doing a great job, which is fantastic. So I'm so delighted. So, it, you know, over the years, we we started scaling very quickly, and suddenly we were, you know, leasing cars to the tune of like £40 million a month, when the year before we had a funding line in totality of 5 million. So we were going from like 5 million to 500 million and figuring out how to raise that. Also in the middle of an energy crisis, when banks were like, oh, you're part of an energy company. We're not sure we're actually doing a lot with energy companies right now. And, you know, so... navigating a lot of that, and at the same time hiring a team and building that, and then we had new manufacturers arriving, and then some of them had challenges with maintaining their cars or fixing them or even just delivering them, just turning off at the time when they said they were going to turn up with the cars. You know, there was just a lot of challenges, and so we'd be thrown all these different things. And then by the time it got to 2024, we had a much more stable team in place, a much more stable team. We had done this amazing securitization facility with Lloyds for 550 million. We closed that at the end of 2023. We've since, by the way, increased that now. So that's over 1 billion in that facility. We've got over 2 billion raised to fund the cars. And that's kind of really quite well established now. And the team are well established. And so they were doing so well. And then actually at the same time, my children were of an age where they were kind of going through friendship problems at school and things like that. So that, and they're now 9 and 11. So this would have been when they were kind of 9 and 7. And one of them was having tummy problems, amongst other things, and then ended up in hospital with pneumonia for 3 nights in the middle of 2024. And I was like, do you know what? I think I need to be around a bit more for these kids, and you know, really connect with them on a deeper level. And the team were in the place where they were in a really solid place that I could do that. And so at the beginning of 2025, I took that step out to take a few months off. And it also was great for the team, I think, because then they started to make decisions where they might not have had the confidence to do it previously, or they might have come to me, but they didn't have a choice. But actually, they did it, and they found they were really good at those decisions and running the business. So that's been great as well, because then they've kind of, they know they can do it. But also with the children. So things like, you know, I believe a lot in kind of human connection. And I discovered a thing called treasure time, which is around parent-children play. And like, so actually, I did a 6-week program. So I invited the children to play with me. So I'd send them a card and say, please, can you come and play with mummy in the study on Sunday at 11 o'clock or whatever, 11 till 11:30. And they'd turn up and we'd have a box of crafty things, and then they were in charge. So actually it's very unusual that there's very few times in the kids' lives they actually get to choose where to go or what to do or whatever. So actually it's given them an opportunity to totally be in charge. It's like, today we're going to decorate the box and you're in charge. And at any point, if they come back to you and say, well, what do you think? You say, well, I'm wondering what you would like me to do, or, you know, wondering what you think. And you keep putting it back to them. And so actually, even in the first session, my eldest started to open up to me around some of the things that were going on. But sometimes children don't have the language, as we might, to be able to talk about emotions and feelings. And so they can express it through their art or their crafts. So actually, it's another way of just opening up that kind of connection and dialogue, and for them to be seen and heard. So anyway, I did this program with them. It's designed by a play therapist. And it was really great. So I feel like I've really spent time with my kids a lot more. We've really built that connection. And the one that had been unwell is really thriving. She had to go through an 11-plus process. And we live in London. It's this crazy process for anyone that doesn't live in London. It's just totally wild, where we make our kids sit really hard tests and do interviews for schools when they're like 10. And then half of them don't get offers first time around, and then there's like a kind of clearing process. Anyway, what a wild thing to get kids to do. But she did get some offers from school. She's decided to stay at her school. She's very happy and she's absolutely smashing it now. So that's great. And the younger one too. So I spent a lot of time with kids. I did that philosophy course that we talked about earlier. And it's funny you think that I was kind of trying to reinvent things before, because actually I felt like I was just trying to get stuff delivered. You know, I was trying to get funding delivered, or I was trying to get the cars delivered, or I was trying to help make sure customers were looked after, or that the team had what they needed. You know, I was doing all these things, do. Whereas really on sabbatical, it was a lot more around being and exploring. And there was another, as part of the philosophy course, I got asked at the beginning, is there somebody that you can think of that's really thriving in life? I don't know, maybe you can have a think just now as to who you think you know that you think is really thriving, and what is it about them that makes you think they're really thriving? And I got invited to this friend. The friend I thought of was a lady called Som. I got invited to her 10th wedding anniversary in the summer. And I was there and I was saying to her husband, I was like, I got asked this question. Som is really the person that came to mind. She's really just seems to love life and really enjoy it and live it. And she's got everything sorted out. You know, she just seems to be smashing it. And he's like, yeah, I thought about this a lot. And he's like, how much of your time do you think about the past, the present, and the future? And I was like, well, probably I spend about 10% thinking about the past, 10% thinking about the present, and 80% thinking about the future. Probably doesn't surprise you, right? I'm always like, what's coming? And he's like, she's 10-80-10. 10% past, 80% present, and 10% future. And she's just really enjoying where she is right now with who she's with. And I think that was quite meaningful, which is like, you know, when you're there and you're with your kids, I would always be like juggling, cooking them dinner, making sure they've done their homework, looking at Slack to see if there's something else that the team need, you know, whereas actually it's like, put Slack away. I really try now very proactively when I'm with my kids, I'm with my kids. And I'm trying not to juggle lots of different things or think about where I'm, you know, what I'm doing in 2 hours or what's going on next week or what's going on next holiday. Just enjoy the time that you've got with them right now. There you go.
I am stunned. Yeah. I don't think I've ever heard the value of the present articulated so well. And actually, I know it might sound a little strange to feel emotional, actually, you sharing that, because I love the fact that you've invested in your kids and your family and yourself in such a powerful way. The idea of treasure time is, I mean, it will be for many, will be something that they could only dream of with perhaps their own parents, and that's perhaps what I'm reflecting on. But it sort of emphasizes that bit where I started, where you said about the investment that you put in other people, and that's what I love, the earth set, that facilitation of people coming. And I, you know, again, feeling strangely emotional, but when you we were in a room together and we went round the table, and it was we were all asked to introduce ourselves and what we do, and I said something random about vans and said nothing else and rambled for a bit, and then you gently waited to the end of the conversation and went, and just tell everybody a little bit about the EV Cafe and a little, you know. And it was so gentle, and so it just opened a door. I'd been so dumb. I'm useless at introducing myself. And I know that's not the way you should speak about yourself, but I am not very good at it. I just kind of go straight in and whatever. but you just invited the right kind of content out of me. And I love it. And the recognition, I think, you know, because I know that you went to Davos, to the World Economic Forum, were able to talk about women in leadership. Because I think people perceive the need for, inverted commas, women in leadership, to be these striving, determined women that look like what we expect sort of male, masculine leadership to be, but not so with you. You just demonstrate a leadership that is exactly what we need, and you're investing in the next generation, but you're doing that from the present and doing it with your kids. I don't know if there's a question in there somewhere, but I'm just in awe in some respects. But to the question, how was it to speak at Davos and to do that whole leadership thing?
That's very kind words, Paul. Thank you. And I'm glad I was able to encourage you to speak about the EV Cafe because I love what you do. So, you know, I'd really want to help supercharge you getting your communication even to more people. So, yeah, I'd love to continue to do that. Davos is great. Maybe we can talk about Earthset and women and then Davos. So Earthset that you've talked about a couple of times, thank you for that too. I wrote out a couple of years ago, the thing that was holding me back or holding Octopus EV back was basically having the right people at the right time in the team, because you'd then be recruiting and it takes a long time to recruit, etc. And I was like, I'm sure my network knows great people that probably would enjoy this job and be good at this job. So how do I mobilize the network to kind of help on that? And what I think if we've got in our community, and I think this includes a lot of your listeners, but also now the Earthset group, is people that care about the planet, that aren't necessarily competing with each other, but would love to see each other do really well. And I think we see it a lot, things like Everything Electric and the kind of community that comes together of actually people that really root for each other. You know, like you've got people like Lorna, like actually all of your EV Cafe hosts, you know, all of your group are people that root for each other doing different things across the sector. Now, how do we kind of mobilize that across this broader community to help people find, you know, maybe investors, or whether they need to find team members, or whether they need to find partners? They just need that intro, that first intro, you know, when you're like still starting out and you need somebody to just go, yeah, this person's credible, you should have that meeting, or just open the door. And then also just having a sounding board, somebody that goes, do you know what? I've got this thing going on, you know, with this team member or with this partner, I'm not quite sure where they're coming from, or there's this policy that I don't, yeah, it just doesn't make sense to me. Why do they do it that way? You know, how do I speak to someone about getting it changed? And then you've got people across the community that can help troubleshoot with you and help you navigate what your next step should be. So the Earthset community has been set up with that in mind, and we meet on a monthly basis. We have first Tuesday of every month, we have a flagship event where we come together and we have a speaker or a panel of speakers. So the last one in at the beginning of March was carbon removal. The next one is on just transition. We're doing one, for example, in South by Southwest on plastics. There's a whole kind of combination of things. And now we have a podcast as well. I can't say it's as fun as yours, but we do have a Earthset podcast where we record these so that if you can't make it in person, you can listen back to the conversation and the topics. So sharing some of those ideas more widely. And so that's really fun. We also have a book club now as well that we have the authors along from some of these books. So tonight we're meeting with Henry Sanderson, who's the author of Vault Rush. And he actually talks about EVs and batteries and the supply chain and, you know, where lithium comes from, but then how it's all, you know, mostly processed in China. And it just covers the whole kind of history of it. It's really fascinating for anyone that's new to EVs, for example. It's a really good kind of teaching, and it's on Audible too. So anyway, that's been really fun, kind of bringing that community together. And we're still at the kind of early stages of that. And we now kind of do advisory work for some companies as well. Just like even 2 hours a month troubleshoot with them to help, you know, just accelerate them on their journey. Because for me, success is really all of us thriving in this, right? Like Octopus EV can thrive. I love that. That's really exciting. And I'm so excited for all the team as well that are involved in that and the customers. But actually the whole community, not just in the EV community, but the wider kind of people that are working and putting their energy into like making, fighting climate change, basically. Like, how do we all work together? So that's the Earthset. I have something similar in the female leadership space called Stellar Set. And then Davos is fascinating. So if you've not been to Davos before, there's like different levels of priority. And so like there's these things called white badges, and they get you into the Congress Center. And that's where the speeches were made, like the Trump and the Carney speech. And, you know, that's where you kind of have some of those. And then there's a next level down, and that's accreditation, and you kind of can get through the police cordons, and that lets you into different venues. And then there's a fringe. And this, the whole of Davos, this kind of Swiss ski town, and there's a promenade, like this kind of what would normally be shops full of like ski gear or whatever. It's been taken over by lots of different companies, and it's everything from like Accenture or Salesforce or any of the AI businesses. You know, you might have Anthropic were there, you have an AI house, LinkedIn were obviously there. Like there was a whole bunch of companies and suppliers, and in all of these different venues that you then got different talks going on at any one time. And it could be a breakfast round table or it could be a panel session. But it's like this kind of conference in a Swiss ski town. It's just the most bizarre thing. But it's got just amazing people. So you just don't know what conversation you're going to go into next, where it could be about children and education and mental health. It could be about women in leadership. It could be about the energy transition. It could be about the supply chain for cobalt and lithium or copper. So the whole thing is really full of experts. And actually, one of the most interesting ones in the EV space I went to was on circularity. And the Ellen MacArthur Foundation, so the sailor Ellen MacArthur, she's really passionate about circularity. She's done a lot around plastics. And now she's launched an initiative around battery circularity and the materials going into batteries. And in that was the founder of CATL. We had one of the, you know, senior directors from Hyundai there. But there was maybe 20 of us around this table having a conversation, mining backgrounds, you know, long duration energy storage, a whole kind of cohort of people to talk about the challenges. And what was interesting is one of the guys from the mining background was really talking about leasing these critical minerals. So he wanted to start leasing the copper, the lithium. And almost the best analogy I have for this is almost like a freehold. You know, when you buy a property and there's a leasehold and a freehold, like he owns the freehold, you have the leasehold, and you get to use that for the next 10 years or 20 years, and then you can renew it. But he wants to have the copper back, he wants to have the lithium back, he wants to have the cobalt back. And then you kind of almost pass it with that certificate into each use. So you've obviously got the first use might be in the car. By the way, it might end up in a second car because the cars, the batteries are outlasting the cars. Maybe then it will end up in residential or, you know, large scale energy storage. Before then, it then might get recycled and be put into something new. So then it might find its way back to him. So anyway, so there's this kind of interesting concept, but it has to be kind of designed in upfront rather than later on. So the kind of, back to the Davos question, it's very broad in terms of what you might find yourself talking about, but also with these kind of really thought-provoking conversations around things like very specific to EVs.
If you operate a fleet of cars or vans, you'll know electric is the future. Transitioning to EVs can appear daunting, but with Europcar, it's effortless. Our long-term EV rentals eliminate the upfront costs, contract commitments, and uncertainty. Instead, you'll get total flexibility, a wide choice of cars and vans, and Europcar's expert support. So, make the switch without the stress and experience Europcarma. Search Europe Car Business.
I'm going to give you a choice, Fiona. I'm going to give you a choice of question. So I can either ask you a question about you as a person, or I can ask you a question about the industry that we are all involved in. Which would you prefer to have?
I would prefer to have whatever you think is most fun.
Yeah, see, I've seen this trick with done kids before. Yeah, we're not having that. So I need a straight answer. Do you want to talk about you? Because I need you to uncover some things about you that I don't think I've ever heard you talk about. Or we'll talk about something that you do within the industry that you're making a really positive impact with. You choose.
I think you sounded more excited about the first. So let's go with the first. What do you need me to uncover?
Let's uncover it. Right. So.
Well done.
You are renowned as a lovely person, people focused, and you deliver results through the people that you work with. I don't think I've ever met anybody who is quite so singularly people focused as you are. But as a human being, you must have gaps in the makeup of Fiona Howarth. You cannot be the complete human being. What are you working on personally after your sabbatical to plug some of those gaps?
I've got to tell you that I'm not a people person. I'm not very good with people. No, generally. So, like, you know how I really, honestly. So, you know, I'm an engineer. I'm an engineer by background, and I'm good at with maths and physics, right? And I see a problem, and I want to solve a problem. And so, actually, if you speak to people that work with me, you know, I'm not the person that remembers to go, oh, thanks, John. Thanks, Paul, for making this happen. I'd be like, oh, you told me that you want to solve this problem, let's solve the problem. And so I quickly jump into the problem solving rather than the people stuff. So I have, in my team, I specifically hired people to help me think about that.
Right. I'm going to tell people a little story now. So we jumped on this call and Fiona Howarth said to me, I said to Fiona, oh, Fiona, how are you? And she said, no, far more important, how are you?
But you have been unwell.
That is not somebody who's trying to solve a problem. You cared more about how I was than about blowing about yourself. You are absolutely a people person, even if you don't recognise it. So enough of your nonsense. But let's move past that to... okay, what are the gaps? What are the things that you're currently working on? Because you've always got a plan and you've always got something you're developing yourself into. So what are the gaps that you're trying to plug in Fiona Howarth to make you superwoman?
To make me superwoman? I'm definitely still working on my relationship with my kids. I'm sure they wouldn't say that I'm superwoman. But I think... My brain naturally just goes to how do we make things better for everyone?
As a human being, what are you trying to make better? Because none of us is complete. We're a work in progress. What are you working on? We can do this all day.
I'm working on eating badly.
Keep going.
Not snacking on chocolate late at night.
You must have identified gaps. I mean, I know I talk too much. I know that I can be overly emotional. Those are things that I'm working to deal with. Paul, you must have a gap somewhere.
So, as we currently speak, I meet with a coach come counsellor to talk about all my old demons, hence being emotional earlier. I've got tons of gaps. I've got a terrible memory. I'm rubbish at introducing myself. I talk too much, as I'm proving right now.
I don't see these as your gaps. The fact that you both talk and that you bring energy and positivity to the conversation, that's like
focusing
your superpower.
On other people, focusing on everybody else, answer the question, please.
Do you know what? We all get stuff wrong and we're all going to have gaps. And I don't know, maybe I'm just shifting. I do think that we spend a lot of time thinking about our weaknesses, whereas actually really embracing them as like things that are unique about you.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, there might be a gap to one person, but maybe they're just a superpower in a different place. So maybe that's okay. And maybe that's okay because that's just who you are. And that's cool.
Oh, Fiona, we've got to ban you from the use of the word we, our, and you've got to use the word I.
Me.
Never it's all good.
We'll let you away with it. I think we found the gap.
Maybe that's the gap. That's the gap. I can't admit where my gaps are. My gap is that I can't see my gaps. Maybe that's it.
Oh, goodness me.
Yeah, no, we're starting at ground zero, aren't we, on that one?
Oh, that's one wonderful way to go. Do you know, I've done 150 of these, more or less, with Paul. That has got to be one of my favourite moments ever. Brilliant.
Oh, dear. Well, one of the things that struck me, Fiona, is that, and I think this kind of conversation is sort of an exemplar of this. I don't notice that you push yourself forward. But that's not to say that you don't step out of the limelight or do anything like that, but socially. So you're not on LinkedIn particularly a lot. I don't know if you have a Twitter or it's X now, isn't it? Yeah, I'm up with the kids. Instagram and all of that kind of stuff. But do you deliberately just kind of, I mean, is this part of that being in the present, being in the moment thing? Is there a particular reason? Was it a choice, or do you just not care about that bit of life?
I think when I've got something to say, I am on there. So, you know, celebrating some of the big wins. I think I've been on LinkedIn, for example, to celebrate big wins of people that have really helped with those big wins and celebrate them. So I would say if I've got something to say, I'll be there. And otherwise, yeah, I'm probably hanging out with people trying to solve the next big problem. Or with my kids. So, you know, I do like being with people and solving things with people rather than online. I'd much prefer to chat to people with it rather than do it online.
So I've got a really good example of that. You've just launched a major collaboration with InstaVolt and Chargy to lobby the government to put EV charging signs on the same legal footing about pricing as petrol stations. This is something that has ripped my knitting for years. So thank you for doing that. You are a real collaborator, aren't you? You're somebody who, you know, gets a team together and you go do stuff. Have you always been a team player, or are you actually a bit of a lone star who's out there doing your own thing, getting people together and letting them just crack on and do it?
I think there's a real bit of everything, aren't we? I mean, I would say that I like to have time to reflect for myself and be able to have that time to think about what's going on for me and what is important to me, because I think there's also a lot going on in the world generally, right? And so therefore it's easy to do what you're pulled to rather than what you want to do, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And so therefore, yeah, I do like to have a bit of time to myself, but I did a lot of team sports when I was younger.
What were you good at?
So I rode when I was younger, and I might have represented Britain and been a captain of the British team.
I just love watching you squirm.
You're not good at talking about this. Somebody the other day when I was giving a presentation, like, don't hold back, get the rowing in there. So I also rode at university. I rode in the reserve crew for Oxford. That was fun. And we won. We won our boat race. In fact, Oxford phenomenal won every boat race that year, which was quite fun. Yeah, it's good. I quite like being part of a team. It's really fun to win as part of a team. And I like winning not because I don't want to beat people, but I just want to be great. And I want to be great at helping us all be great together. Like, and I really like helping people be great. I really have discovered how much I enjoy helping other people be great.
Now I need to know that
even more than myself being great.
I need to know which college you went to.
I was at St. Catherine's College, Cats.
St. Catherine's, right.
I was at Cats in Oxford, yeah.
I was at Keble.
Oh, that's it, Cats, yeah.
Oh, I like Keble. Keble also very good, like, technically, in things like engineering and physics and stuff as well. Yeah. What did you do, John?
A summer school about retail. I was only there a week.
It's lovely. Totally not engineering at all.
Oh, dear.
So, yeah, we won't go into my educational achievements or otherwise. Yes, the closest I've got to Oxford is the Ring Road. But there we go.
Your school was approved, though.
And very secure. Oh, dear. Oh, I don't know. Anyway, I don't know where to go with that. I mean, where did you go after that, apart from? Because I don't know if we did this with you the first time, so this might be the first time we get you on record. I think it's right, isn't it? Yes.
I think you're right.
Now then,
I know what's coming.
None of this we nonsense and our nonsense and all this. This is just for you. Okay, you ready?
I'm ready.
So, it's the Eevee Cafe Magic Wand.
Woo!
So, we give everybody that joins the Eevee Cafe.
I can't believe this is going to happen. I just can't.
Well, Fiona, so you've got to participate. So, we're going to pass this to you so that you can make one wish. Okay, so you only get one. And here it comes. It's not that big. Oh, there we go. That's better.
That's getting clipped out. That is definitely.
Oh, dear. Good. So you are now in possession of the Eevee Cafe Magic Wand. And thank you for accepting it with good grace. You have one wish. What would you like? Now, we've had all kinds of things. We have had a personal chef. That was for Adam Bishop, who had to eat something like 9,000 calories a day or some such nonsense. So he needed somebody to cook for him, and we'd give him 4 hours a day back. We've world peace is sorted. So just, you know, fill your boots.
It has to be for me rather than for us.
I think that's definitely the way we're going to go with this one.
Do you not think, like, if there's any one thing at the minute, I would love, but this would bring me great joy.
Go.
Would be just for, like, the UK population to realise that, you know, loads of great green technologies are good for them and not nearly as expensive as the narrative suggests. And that actually it can save them money, can save them energy, and it can help save the planet, which actually loads of them care about. Like 83% of the UK public think that climate change is a big deal and that we need to do more. But the UK public overestimate the cost of net zero by 14,000%. So there was some research done by FGS Global, and compared to what the Climate Change Committee thinks it's going to cost, what people estimate, it's like 14,000% more expensive than they realise. So they just think it's going to cost the UK huge amounts of money to achieve net zero for very little gain for them personally day to day. And they also think that even if jobs will be created, they're not going to receive those jobs. So it's very hard to kind of talk about the future economy piece. So I'd love for them to just realise the kind of benefits for them and how exciting it is, which is why I think what you guys are doing is so great. But also all of the listeners that are out there kind of telling their stories, whether it be about EVs or solar or whatever else that they've got going on. You know, it's really, I would just love you all to be super successful because that would just be brilliant for everyone. So there you go. I mean, I have managed to turn this around into a wee without meaning to, but it would bring me lots of joy.
But
I would love you to be successful.
At least you wanted joy. That's lovely. So this is the wish that Fiona had. I want joy. There you go.
Yes.
That's it.
Always.
Yeah, exactly. And do you know what? As you shared that, there's a guy that is in our network, and he's been on the podcast actually. He won a well-being award, for the Christmas crackers. So we had a thing called the Christmas crackers at Christmas, obviously. That people that had just done wonderful things, and this guy is just one of those guys that has leaned into this kind of desire to help and educate and support the green transition with everything he does. He's got a job in IT, so he's not, unfortunately, he's not got a job in EV as such. But Stuart Humphrey, you need to look him up, because Stuart Humphrey, he posted the other day on solar, and it was wind actually that had performed particularly well. And he said, you know, the energy was like really low, and it was 39 grams per kilowatt hour and all this kind of stuff. And just talked from his very simple setup with solar and a battery and all of that kind of stuff, and just talked to people. And he's great on mental health in particular and well-being, but he's just one of those people that is a lovely communicator, and we need more of those people, and more people just like you. We need more Stuarts. Absolutely,
everyone be more Stuart.
There you go, and
it's also different people talk to different audiences. So Stuart will really resonate with some people, but we need other people. And this is back to, you know, kind of some of the earlier conversation around really people being themselves. And they might be like, oh, but I don't do that thing that Stuart does. But it's okay, because probably the way that they will speak will resonate with other people. So we need everyone across every background to go out and do it and just talk to each other about the things that they like about the green tech.
Yeah, but you mentioned that earlier about this kind of team approach, that recognizing that we can't all do everything. We have our lanes, our skills, our gifts, the things that we're good at. I have some things I'm good at, and I do recognize that I have value. John, yes, John has gifts too, that we recognize. Shh, be nice. But we also recognize that we desperately need other people. And we've talked about this as the EV Cafe. We're quite open about our need for people like you, Fiona, to speak to us. So, you know, you should come and spend a day with us. How about that? Would you like to do that?
Yeah, always. I love hanging out with
Good.
You guys.
Right. Let me know a day in your calendar that we will come and spend a day with you. And we won't even make you come. We'd love
Let's
to.
Let's do it.
I think we all need to kind of understand a little bit about our blind spots and also fill those gaps, because we want to be more effective. We all do, right? With all that you've done, are always looking to be building to be more effective. So I think that's something
reminds me of the dry stone wall kind of analogy. Did we talk about that last time?
No, I don't think so. Don't recall it. Go for it.
This is a kind of way that Greg talks about teams, actually, within Octopus. So Greg Jackson is our group CEO. And a few years ago, he's like, I've been thinking about this. I think about dry stone walls. And so if you think about the way we build walls today, we create these uniform bricks and we stack them up, and they last, but they don't last as long as dry stone walls that have actually been together for, you know, decades, hundreds of years even. And the thing with dry stone walls is that you take different stones, and they're of different shapes and different sizes. And the skill of putting together a dry stone wall is really about how they fit together. And people, you know, they've got different shapes, and that you need to fit them together. And if you fit them together well, then they will last really long time in a really strong way. And the reality is that we as humans are not all really uniform. We all have our strengths. We might have our gaps. But the key is, you know, where there's the gap, you find somebody else's strength to kind of fit alongside them. And then you kind of complement each other, and then you're much stronger together. And so I love it. I often talk about marketing in this context, because marketing is so broad. It's everything from like creating a brand and being really creative through to digital marketing, which is much more analytical. And they're actually quite different skill sets. And then there's everything in between with things like comms or press. And so actually it's quite unusual that you'd find one person that's good at everything in marketing. And so really importantly, you know, you might start with a generalist, but then you want to kind of start to build around them so that you're complementing their superpowers with somebody else that's got different superpowers in the same way as you're fitting together a dry stone wall that's got different shapes and sizes. So, you know, the more that we can be like, okay, well, I'm not that strong at that, then I'm going to pull in somebody that's really good at that so that we can, you know, I'm going to dream about the future and things that we might want to test out and try. And then maybe other people could help me execute that, like deliver it, or somebody else might be able to look out for the team while we're doing it and help find the good people, and somebody else can do the finance. And then we kind of come together to deliver that. And I think that's exactly right, right? And there's people that we really need to tell the story of the EV transition, whether that be Stuart or yourselves, and, you know, really promote that to everyone. And actually, we need lots of people doing that to communicate with the different places. So anyway, whatever your superpower is, like, run with the superpower. Don't worry about the gaps. Run with the superpower.
So true.
It is true. And it's just, I'm going to hand it on, but I do remember there's a great course. I probably got the book somewhere. But yeah, is it this, that, and Discover Your Strengths? Anyway, it's about this focusing on your strengths. So, and it kind of distills them down to like five strengths or whatever. And you kind of go and you find your strengths and you focus in on and zero in on those things. Because, and the way I've sort of played this forward in my head is that if you get sort of Mo Farah, and, you know, maybe those younger won't know who Mo Farah is, but he was a great long distance runner, just kind of run everybody else off the track, and he was brilliant. And, you know, he could run reasonably fast for a short distance, but, you know, but still he was really well. And then you've got Usain Bolt, you know, who could do, you know, that 100 metres in like the quickest time in the world ever. And he'd go to 200 metres and he'd, yeah, 400 metres, he gets a bit bored about halfway round and just kind of thinks, I'd rather go and play football and chill out. So you've got two different people, right, with different strengths. Usain Bolt, great over 10 seconds and 100 metres. And you've got Mo Farah that's got the mindset to do, you know, 20 laps of the track and will still outrun everybody. But if you try and get Usain Bolt to do 20 laps, he's done. And if you try and get Mo Farah to do 100 metres, he's not going to win. They're two different people.
And then if you brought them into a corporate, they'd be like, well, you really need to think about developing your presentation skills and this kind of stuff. What a loss to the world that they wouldn't be doing their amazing running and using their superpower, right? Like, so it's not even like it's a sideshow. It's like there'd be, you know, so somebody that should be doing great at coding and developing, does it matter that they're not good at presentation skills?
No, it doesn't.
Let's find somebody else in the dry stone wall to do the presentation of their great coding work.
It happened. Yeah. It happened in the around the 2000. You know, when Silicon Fen was all going on in and around the Cambridge area. So there was this whole thing where businesses that were creating Bluetooth for phones and things like this was early doors. And I was working for a very, very short time in a tech company doing recruitment. I didn't like it. It was rubbish. But the stories that I heard was that the companies that had grown up around these great ideas were being run by people that were brought in by the founders, because the founders were sitting in a corner coding, doing all of that sort of stuff. They didn't want people, you know, go away with your people stuff. Go away with this. I want a dark room and I want to code. I don't care about anything else. Can you just run a business for me and build, you know, my many millions that I'm going to earn from this Bluetooth stuff and from dealing with Y2K and all of that kind of nonsense that we had back then? It's such an important thing, isn't it? It's a real gift to recognize that actually this is my strength. I've got to stay in my lane. Vans is mine.
Yeah, or just embrace it. Yeah, just be really comfortable with, like, I don't have to be the people leader, or I don't have to, you know, I think it's such a shame that for so many years, these corporate kind of development programs, you know, we talk about feedback. One of the things, we work quite closely with a psychologist who has worked across a lot of the Octopus teams, actually, a guy called David Priestley, who also used to do a Premier League football team and now does a national rugby team as well. And he's fantastic. So he helps us think about how we operate in high performance environments and be a high performance team and look after each other as well and, you know, work together. So David, instead of talking about feedback, because the past has happened, right? The past has happened. You can't go back and change it. Instead, he talks about feed forward. So actually, you know what? You can think about, if you want to do that better next time, you might want to think about X, Y, and Z. So instead of criticizing what's happened, think about how do you help somebody perform better going forward. And I quite like that, feed forward instead of feedback.
JC, what feed forward have you got?
I think you could do more, to be honest, and I think you're not pushing yourself hard enough.
I often feel the same. Do you know, I think it's hilarious. My nine-year-old disappeared upstairs. And then I heard like the hairdryer was on, but also that like she wanted to do some yoga. So I could hear some noise from the room where the yoga she might do. And then also I could hear the hairdryer. I turned up and she was like literally trying to dry her hair while trying to set up the yoga mats. And like... So what kind of example have I set where he thinks that we can just do like multiple things all at once, you know, like literally I'm going to dry my hair, throw out the yoga mats, you know, sort it all out, Mum, but just do it all at once.
We embrace neurodiversity here, I tell you.
We have to.
What can you say? I mean, Fiona Howe, if you blew me away the first time I spoke to you. I've run out of superlatives. I just have no words left. If I could show you my heart, it's bigger now than it was when we started. It always is, because you fill it full of joy. And you mentioned joy yourself. You create joy in other people. And that is your superpower.
That is... the loveliest thing I think anyone's ever said to me. Thank you.
I'm just glad that I'm married, because otherwise I'd be making a fool of myself.
I mean, what a pleasure. What a nice thing to think that your superpower might be to create joy for other people.
That's yours, in my view.
No, I'm definitely going to hold on to that.
I'm never going to be as gracious, Fiona, you know, because we've got to keep... somebody's got to keep you on the ground. But I feel very privileged that we uncovered today, because it really is that celebrating others, which you do so well. We heard the story the first time we spoke about, and I don't want to attempt to get the guy's name correct.
Gurjeet, because, yeah.
Gurjeet, there you go. Thank you. We heard about Gurjeet, not by name the first time round. So I would encourage everybody to go and listen to the first episode that we did with Fiona. I think it was like the fourth episode or third episode. It was really, really early doors. And I think we got a really privileged insight into you and to where you went in that COVID period and that challenge. And we've seen it come full circle. That investment that you made in somebody, that faith that you put in somebody, and almost that loyalty that they gave back to you in that moment has come. And we've seen a tree grow. We've seen the acorn planted, and we've seen that grow just right before our very eyes. And we've heard that today. And that's the value of investment that you put in people in your business, and now, you know, in a beautifully shared how you're doing it in your own kids, and we're going to see those trees grow as well, and also, you know, the Earth Set, the leadership forums, you're just constantly planting acorns that are going to grow into mighty oaks, and that for me is joyful. And it's really cool. I honestly can't have enjoyed an hour more than we've just done. It's been so lovely. And I love listening to you and think that you should write a book, because there is so much more. John's just put in the chat, it was episode 9 that you were on.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, there's a lot of other bits. I thank you for that. I think that's also a lovely image of being able to plant acorns and see them grow. What a nice idea. And for those that haven't yet listened to that other podcast, I think that was the first time I talked about that actually publicly, around how challenging, you know, lockdown had been for so many of us, but I definitely felt that. And I was ready to walk away from Octopus EB because it was so overwhelming at the time. And one of my team members spent 2 hours on the phone with me, kind of helping me reorganize the team and how they worked with me and how we all worked together to enable it to be possible that I could stick with it. And I would say, although you think that might be investment that I gave into the team, you know, they really invested in me as well. It was, you know, they really backed me, and they, you know, that individual kind of said to me, no, it's okay. And then they all came together to really support me in that time. So I think that was hugely special. And yeah, I really enjoy working with that team. And I hadn't realized how much joy it can bring, back to the joy point. I mean, really, be able to create an environment where people can be themselves, that people can even sometimes discover their superpower, because they might not even know yet what they could do and how much they can do if they really back themselves and if they feel like they've got backing. So it's really a very selfish thing to be able to enjoy watching all these people do well. So, you know, it's very symbiotic, isn't it? But no, I enjoy it a lot. And
you are many, many things, Fiona Howarth, but selfish is not one of them.
I get a lot of joy out of it. Anyway, so I what a pleasure. It's such a pleasure. Thank you for having me back on the show as well.
So we obviously encourage everyone to go back and listen to the episode 9. On that note, have a great day, everybody. Thank you, Fiona.